The Purpose Podcast, a podcast series brought to you by Social Business Trust to celebrate the 10-year anniversary. The podcast will explore social impact, corporate purpose, and social innovation. We'll be bringing together diverse voices and perspectives from in and around Social Business Trust's network to look at the importance of the social sector in an ever-changing world. We'll also show how working in partnership with businesses and volunteers helps social enterprises and charities grow and deliver life-changing impact. Thanks goes to the corporate partners for their ongoing support: Bain, Charles Russell Speechleys, Clifford Chance, EY, Permira, Permira Debt Managers, Refinitiv, and Thomson Reuters.
Welcome to this episode of the Purpose Podcast. This episode looks at volunteering and its role in the economy. Joining me today is Andy Haldane, Chief Economist of the Bank of England, Steve Varley, Global Vice Chair for Sustainability at EY, and Larissa Joy, Chair of the Social Business Trust.
Whether it's for us as individuals or whether it's the aggregate impact of the sector on the economy or society, that role is huge, but also hugely underestimated and underappreciated right now.
There's an over-measurement of financials, and if the COVID crisis has taught us anything, I think one of the things it has taught us is that one must be more reflective and take a broader view of, frankly, what makes you happy and what makes you sad.
I don't think the way that we value volunteering currently goes any way to be able to measure the long-term impact and value of the volunteering that's given to the social enterprises.
Hi, Andy. Clearly, this is a topic on which you're laser-focused. Why is it important to measure and understand the value that the social sector brings to the economy?
Thanks, Toby. And happy birthday, SBT. 10 terrific years. Well, I think right now the social sector is chronically, I'd say, underestimated, underappreciated in the impact it has on us as individuals, on the economy, and indeed on wider society. So for us as individuals, we know from all sorts of studies that volunteering is one of the things that generates the greatest amount of happiness and well-being for us as people, right up there with sport and other leisure activities. We know economically that the social sector makes a huge contribution, perhaps as much as 10% of national income, but only a fraction of which is currently captured in our standard success measures. And we also know, I think, societally, that the social sector is an absolutely crucial piece of social glue. It's one of the key contributors to, if you like, social capital, to community togetherness. It's one of the key factors, I think, that is helping contain discontent, be that populism or wider concerns about inequality. So I think whether it's for us as individuals or whether it's the aggregate impact of the sector on the economy or society, that role is huge, but also hugely underestimated and underappreciated right now. And that's a key defect, and one I hope looking forward we can correct.
If I could maybe just add in that if we reflect over the decades, we have collectively, especially in business, built a system that tends to measure financial performance and financial rewards. And even the way that governments talk about prosperity is anchored in financials. There is a growing trend now for organizations to look at a broader set of measures. There's this movement which has created a three-letter acronym of ESG, Environmental, Societal and Governance. And I think there is, if I had to be optimistic just for a second, that with this movement, a chance that we can better break out of just measuring a financial return from the contribution of charities, of not-for-profits, as well as major corporates. And so I'm optimistic about the future. But still, at the moment, I think there's an over-measurement of financials. And if the COVID crisis has taught us anything, I think one of the things it has taught us is that one must be more reflective and take a broader view of, frankly, what makes you happy and what makes you sad.
And Larissa, how does the Social Business Trust play into this question?
Thanks, Toby. Social Business Trust was established 10 years ago with a fundamental belief that all boats rise when the social enterprise sector and business and finance have a sustained action-based dialogue. And our partner firms collaborate to invest professional time and make cash grants to help high-potential social enterprises grow their impact. And over the last 10 years, we've invested over £20 million of professional time and cash through our corporate partners into helping social enterprises to grow. Unusually, I understand it's unusual, SBT actually records and measures the value of that volunteering donated to SBT and its social enterprises. And we take the view that that volunteering that's contributed by our world-class partners is so fundamental to what we do that it would be absolutely ridiculous not to reflect it. So it's reflected in our income statements, in our report and accounts. And we take that time as seriously as we take money. So we also give cash grants. But when we meet as an investment committee, we spend a lot of time talking about the size of a cash grant, but we spend even more time together talking about the investment that our corporate partners will make in helping social enterprises grow. And increasingly, our social enterprises tell us that they value that volunteering and the help that they're given even more than they do the cash grants that we make.
Thanks, Larissa. So, Steve, moving on to you. If we need to refocus on supporting civil society and to be able to value the social sector as a key part in this, how do you see the role of the private sector?
Well, as ever, I'd start off by saying I think that this is a two-way street. So undoubtedly, the private sector has a lot to contribute, primarily maybe in broader skills and capabilities, so finance, HR, IT, IT implementation especially, which tends to be incredibly complicated and a big cost burden. So there's skills that can come in from the private sector, but there's also this, with this idea of a two-way street, there's many things that the private sector could learn from social enterprises. So I'm amazed when I talk to social entrepreneurs, not just about their passion for what they do, but the narrative that they create to state their purpose. They're nearly always very clear on why they exist, what their contribution is, not just in terms of a return, but actually even more their contribution to society. And they've nearly always got that narrative incredibly clearly articulated. And I think business could do some help in that area. Business hasn't focused as much as it should have done on what the purpose of business is. In fact, if I was to just play around with that famous Milton Friedman quote, where he said, somewhat erroneously, the business of business is business, I think the reframe that we see today is that the business of business is bigger than business. And I think that's an idea that will start to permeate through a lot of the private sector, that what we're expected to do and what we need to do is step up even more than we have done in the past. So it's a two-way street, private to social entrepreneurs. And then in the back of that two-way street, we, the private sector, have a lot to learn from our social entrepreneur colleagues.
Thanks, Steve. And Andy, I'd like to bring you in on this as well. What's your views?
Well, very much echoing Steve's. I mean, all the evidence speaks very strongly in the direction that Steve so clearly set out. There's a twin win that comes from volunteering, perhaps even a triple win. I mean, it works for the individual in terms of their own career journey and skill building. It works for the company for which they work in building those skills, and indeed making people happier in the workplace was a surefire recipe for improved productivity. And the third win is within the charitable sector or the social enterprise, who stand to massively gain from having those different skills, those diverse skills and often quite expensive skills on board and helping the charity function. So I think there are huge potential returns here, the larger part of which, I mean, to Steve's point, currently do not get quantified, whether it's by the individual company in their company accounts or in national economies. In the national accounts, you know, at an aggregate level, we have maybe 20 million people across the UK who regularly volunteer. But by and large, they do not score in our measures of national income, even though they hugely score in our measures of national well-being. So as arid as it sounds, just the measurement part of this that Larissa mentioned she is doing so effectively with SBT needs to enter the mainstream and the bloodstream of our companies and of our economies.
When companies get involved in corporate volunteering, how can the impacts be measured, and how do we aggregate and somehow measure the role and impacts of the private sector?
Well, I was very interested in what Andy said there. There are some real shortcomings in the way that we're measuring the value currently. And at one level, yes, SBT is measuring the value of volunteering and the donations that are made by our corporate partners in its report and accounts. But I don't think that goes any way at all to measuring the real value of the kind of volunteering that our SBT corporate partners make. It's a step in the right direction, but I'll give you an example. Say a talented team member at EY advises a social enterprise on their cost recovery model for bidding for contracts, and it builds the cost model so that the social enterprise can use it whenever it pitches for large contracts. Now, because of the expertise of the EY person, that might take the EY person a couple of hours. And we value that time and reflect it in our accounts. But what the accounting method doesn't recognize or record is that those number of hours result in every subsequent pitch for that social enterprise being priced consciously and keenly. And in the current environment where pricing is really tight for social enterprises, that can make the difference between that social enterprise thriving or sudden death. It allows a social enterprise, for example, that's providing vital mental health services in their community to be sustainable and to carry on delivering the right services to the right people and, importantly, at the right price. And I don't think the way that we value volunteering currently goes any way to be able to measure the long-term impact and value of the volunteering that's given to the social enterprises. I think the other dimension, which Steve may want to come in on here, because EY has been a partner of SBT right from the very start, just the huge value from an employer perspective and an employee perspective from that value exchange that happens between the leaders within our corporate partners and SBT's social enterprises.
Thanks, Larissa. And I know the example you chose there about some modelling, that's a real example. That's a sort of contribution that EY's people have been making to SBT over the decade. And for our people, not only do they come back to EY Central with a smile on their face and a spring in their step because they can see the impact of what they do almost immediately. And that's not something that we always find in the work that we do for major organizations, because it can take a bit longer to play out in a big firm compared to a smaller social enterprise. There's also other positives that EY picks up, some of which you mentioned, Larissa. So not only is there some skills building for our people, but there's also improvement perhaps in their presentation skills, because they get to present to the social enterprises maybe a little bit earlier in their career than they ordinarily would do. And they also get relationship building skills as well. And the core, I think, of a professional services firm like EY, it's our ability to build relationships with our clients that's part of what sustains us. But overall, I would maybe start off with, it's the smile on your face and a spring in your step. It's the return to your soul that's really important for EY people. And I enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, I can echo that as well from personal experience. You know, recently, I took on a role with the Social Business Trust as the investment director for Blue Water. And the time I spend on that is some of the most rewarding time I spend each week. Andy, Steve and Larissa, how has the social sector done during COVID-19? Let's start with you, Andy.
Well, it stood tall, as it has at previous times of extreme societal stress. And you see that in the numbers. You know, you could talk about the 4,000, more than 4,000 community mutual aid groups that have sprung up across the UK during the course of the COVID crisis. You could look at the 750,000 people who volunteered for the NHS. You could look at the perhaps extra 2 million volunteers that have come on stream over the course of this year. And of course, that's to say nothing of the many millions of small acts of neighbourliness and improved community spirit that have come from the COVID crisis. So, you know, as at times in the past, the social sector, social solidarity has been one of the key, largely unsung heroes, actually, of this crisis in repairing those holes in the social fabric. And I think that's telling us something very important. It's a point that Steve made earlier on. This crisis has taught us a lot about what really matters. And my hope looking ahead is that we don't forget that lesson as we do indeed build back, hopefully not just better, but kinder too.
And let's bring you in ahead, Steve, please.
So my kind of take on life is I'm an optimist, but I'm an optimist that worries a lot. So if I had to put my little worry hat on for a moment, I think we'd all say that as we emerge from this health crisis, we are entering an economic crisis and probably an employment crisis as well. So I worry about some of the social enterprises, about their cash, about their cash flow, about their survival. But if I was to be optimistic, I think there's an opportunity here for social enterprises because they do create employment. They add value to society more broadly. And with the disruption that COVID has created, with the rethink that many of us have gone through in what we do in life, what our purpose is, I think there'll be business opportunities for new social enterprises to spring up. And those business opportunities no doubt will bring with it employment opportunities for people that worked maybe in the private sector that have been disrupted through the pandemic. So I think there's an opportunity for optimism, though I must say I do worry a little bit at the moment for some of the social enterprises that maybe had less cash in the bank or value add to their customers. And maybe as the tide goes out, we'll find out, sadly, who has been bathing with no trunks on. And we'll have to provide them with some help.
Thanks, Steve. And Larissa, I know that the Social Business Trust has been really key and instrumental in supporting their social enterprises throughout the pandemic. Can you give us a little bit of colour around what your form that's taken?
Yeah, sure, Toby. I mean, I have just been completely bowled over by the ability of our partners to come together to mobilize around COVID and helping particularly some of our frontline enterprises that are helping the elderly in the community or helping with mental health services or helping provide excellent early years provision in the community. And that has been really phenomenal to see. The speed of response has really made us up the ante in terms of the pace of everything that we do. So in March, on the first lockdown, SBT gathered together a task and finish team from across our corporate partners. And they focused on the needs of our social enterprises on the front line. They mobilized immediately. So organizations like Hertfordshire Independent Living Service that were delivering meals and support to lonely people in the community, London Early Years Foundation that provide excellent nursery education in the community, Bike Works, Moneyline, all of these fantastic social enterprises. And we managed through working in this task and finish team with our corporate partners to get some PPE delivered before PPE was really available. We did seminars on furlough. We did learning sessions on boards managing in a crisis. And we even extended our work to some health trusts and other organizations that aren't in our current portfolio. I think what that showed is just the huge power that the business world has to come together and mobilize themselves around these social enterprises that are absolutely delivering on the front line and delivering with great purpose in the community. And I think, you know, if we're going to talk about COVID, we ought to also, you know, I think talk about antidotes to COVID. And I absolutely love Andy's comment in one of his recent pieces. And he said, volunteering is about rebuilding the institutional immune system that is our social sector. And I don't think that could ever be more true than it is today.
So let's focus on a post-COVID-19 world. How can the private sector amplify and further support their social enterprises post-COVID-19?
Well, Steve mentioned earlier on that, many companies across the UK have made real progress over the last decade, or so, in supporting the charitable sector, in supporting social enterprises, in supporting their communities. And that is absolutely terrific. Truth be told, this is not yet, though, universal across companies. I mean, it's true, for example, that the lion's share of the FTSE 100 companies, for example, would have structured volunteering programs for their staff. That tails off rather rapidly as you move down the size spectrum of companies. There's absolutely more that could be done there to put those activities, whether it's volunteering programs for staff or community support programs of various types, on a more comprehensive footing right across the corporate sector. It's also worth thinking, both Steve and Larissa made this point, about how we put the charitable sector, the social sector, social enterprises, on a somewhat more resilient financial footing than they have been at the past. At the moment, in a way, they're facing, many charities, many social enterprises are facing a perfect storm. The combination of rapidly rising demand for their services as a result of the COVID crisis and all the stresses that that's brought on, at the same time as their finances are being squeezed, and the supply of money is falling very short of the demand for their services. So what better time than now, I think, to think about how we put social enterprises, the charitable sector, on a firmer financial footing than they have been in the past. Of the many resilience lessons we've learned from this crisis, that for me is one of the most important. I'm sure in providing that firmer financial footing, that both the private sector and the state have an important role to play.
Well, that's music to my ears, Andy. I just want to pick up on some of the fairly recent research that's been done on volunteering within a corporate context. And a recent survey showed that 69% of employees say they're not actually volunteering as much as they would like to. And 75% say they would volunteer more if they had a better understanding of the impact we're having. And in another study, the millennials who frequently volunteer are much more likely to rate corporate culture as positive. They're much more likely to feel loyal towards their company, feel proud to work for the company, and be satisfied with their career progression. So I think piecing together the point that Andy has made just there and some of that research does demonstrate that there is a huge opportunity to embrace volunteering within the corporate context and to be able to mobilize and leverage the fantastic skills, attributes and behaviors that employees have for the pursuit of real social purpose.
If I were just to add on to what Andy and Lucy have both said, I know a few organisations in the UK, in the spirit of knowing that what leaders do in any organisation has a profound effect on what everybody else does, they've really stepped up to the mark, I think, during the pandemic, and let's hope they continue, by stepping out of their gilded, caged offices and going out to help social enterprises to volunteer. And I know that one of them is playfully thinking about a very serious point, actually, which is publishing as part of their metrics how many volunteering days the executive does, the board does, maybe even including the non-executives. And I'd love to see something like that, that the more progressive firms from the top are seen to be out helping, volunteering, providing their skills and experience to perhaps accelerate some of the new social entrepreneurs that will pop up over the coming months and years. That, I think, would be a big step forward.
I absolutely love that idea, Steve. I think we ought to run a campaign to get that going, because we all know that what gets measured gets managed. And in the same way that we've seen huge improvements on environmental reporting, ESG reporting, it would be absolutely phenomenal if we could include volunteering. And I love your idea of the non-execs as well as part of the benchmarking.
Thank you to all of our guests today. We can conclude there is more to be done to truly understand the role of volunteering plays, not only in the economy, but in societal well-being as a whole. Corporations need to be more transparent in their reporting of in-kind time given, and we can do much more to truly understand the long-term benefits of volunteering on individuals and on the charities and social enterprises they help. Join us next time.
The Purpose Podcast, a podcast series brought to you by Social Business Trust to celebrate the 10-year anniversary.